Welcome to the Unstoppable Leadership Spotlight, influential leaders and their game-changing insights. I'm Jacqueline Stominger, CEO and founder of Leap to Your Success. That's leaptoyoursuccess.com. We help entrepreneurs, leaders, and CEOs grow their business, become unstoppable high achievers in their careers and life, gaining that 1% edge. We believe every professional has the power within them to leap to their greatest success that not only will impact their life, but the lives of the people they touch. So stick around to the end of the show and we will share with you how you can be our next guest. So stick around for those 15 to 20 minutes and let's be unstoppable. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another amazing episode of the Unstoppable Leadership Spotlight podcast, where we hear amazing leaders, their game-changing insights that help change and revolutionize leadership and leaders today. And I want to welcome to the podcast my amazing guest, Jim Fielding. He is, well, an amazing leader. He has worked at some awesome companies. Disney, DreamWorks, The Gap, Claire's, Fox. I can keep going. You know, and so leadership, obviously, he knows all about good, bad, and ugly leadership and the art of storytelling and strategic brand planning. And one of the key things that he is talking about right now is authentic leadership and that path to personal authenticity. And one of the key things, you know, leadership and having, you know, human-centered leadership is so pivotal for today. And so we are going to hear a lot about that from Jim today. So welcome to the show.
My gosh, thank you for having me, Jacqueline. It's an honor. I'm thrilled to be here.
I am so glad to have you. So, all right. So first, I have to ask a crazy question. You look back at the companies, you know, Disney, Claire's, Gap, DreamWorks. Which one had the best leaders?
Wow, that is a great question. I am not hedging. I would say there's two, but it's different. I mean, the best retail leadership by far was my years at The Gap. I mean, I was at The Gap in the late 80s and most all of the 90s. And the leaders at Gap at that time, Mickey Drexler on down, were incredible retail leader. Like, when I became a CEO, people said, you're a CEO of a retail company, but you don't have an MBA, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, but I worked at The Gap for almost 10 years. And that was like getting a retail MBA. Like, it literally was amazing. And then I would say Disney, which I think Disney's known for. I mean, I was blessed with amazing leadership for 11 of my 12 years. And then I had a rough leadership situation the last year, which actually made me leave the company and made me leave my favorite job. I mean, that my favorite job was president of Disney Store, and I had done that for 4 years, and I had one boss for 3 years and one boss for 1 year, and it changed everything.
Okay, so not that I want to talk about the bad, but I do want to talk about the bad. Sure. Like, what was bad? Like, what's the ugly part about it?
You know, I just think from day one, like, it was weird that I was at Disney for 12 years and I had the same boss for 11 years. That's very odd. And his name was Andy Mooney, and he just understood how to manage me, and he mentored me and let me grow and set really aggressive goals and, you know, was constantly giving feedback, but then he also let me go and just let me do my job. And when he left the company, he was replaced by somebody who I knew, because it was an internal promotion, not from in our group, from another group within Disney. And from day one, it was pretty obvious that we were oil and water and that the way that we approached things was quite different. And my first touch base with him was 8 weeks after he started. And I thought that was a pretty big indication because he only had like 8 direct reports. And so I was like, I literally was going to my assistant every day, Jacqueline, saying, did his office call? Like, did we miss something? Like, am I supposed to be like, when's my one? Like, I was going to group meetings, but everybody else was having these one-on-ones and I wasn't having them. And I thought, okay, he's just putting me at the end. All right. And the first touch base, he was like, I think you're a great executive. I know your reputation. Everybody in the company really likes what you do. I really don't like your business. He just did not like the retail business and like put me instantly on the defensive with him the entire time I worked with him, right? I felt like I was justifying the existence of my business unit, right? This $2 billion Disney store business around the world. And it just was a contentious relationship from day one. And I had an executive coach and would go to my executive coaching sessions and work on how I was going to communicate better and what I was going to do differently. And it really was through the coaching where I realized my boss wasn't going to change. I was changing as much as I could, but I was changing in ways that I wasn't happy and that I was ultimately going to have to leave. Like, that it was a battle I
Right.
couldn't win. And it was an extremely difficult decision and it took me forever to make. But when I look at my path, so I left Disney in 2012, but when I look at 2012 to today, I don't think any of what I've done would have been enabled had I stayed at Disney. Like, I think my path would have looked completely different.
You know, there's a saying, if you can't change your team, right? Like, so you've got to. So in this case, you know, you just changed your team, which was the different company. So,
And
you know.
I was a little bit, I mean, the quote that's always, ascribed to Einstein is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting
Right.
different results. I felt like that's what was happening in our working relationship because I was trying. I literally wanted to be a team player. I wanted to be on his team and I wanted to perform. And but there was things about the business that were just endemic and systemic to that business that I couldn't change. I mean, we had 400 stores around the world with leases and people working in them. Like I couldn't snap my fingers and just make that go away. So it was an interesting time. That year was an interesting time. And I know from listening to your other episodes, many of your guests have said, I actually think you learn more from the bad leaders in those situations than you do from the good leaders. Like I definitely grew, even though it was painful, I grew out of that pain. And I think I became a better leader in my subsequent roles because of all the things that he was doing to me or with me. And I was like, I don't want to do that to anybody. I never
Right.
want to do that to anybody. So I'm going to be different. I'm going to work differently.
Right. And it's true. Like you, we really learn in the down and we rise up to the next wave, so to speak. And then we'll have something else that's a down and we'll keep learning. You know, it is that process.
It is. And it's, I love that you say that, Jacqueline, because when I meet with young leaders, I'm like, it is a roller coaster. Like everybody looks at your resume or looks at your LinkedIn and they think it was like this smooth, linear, ski jump thing, right? And I'm like, no, like it was, and
Yeah, it's more like
it
the
is, it is. Yeah. And it's a lot of like knee injuries and ankle injuries and, bruises but I think it's so important for young people to understand that, right? Because it's not, of course, what's on your LinkedIn, it looks like the land of milk and honey, but it's not always like that.
It's not right. It's not, you know, and so your next place you went to was DreamWorks,
No,
and
Claire's. That's when I became CEO of Claire's.
Claire's. So I'm like thinking, like Claire's like my ears,
So
right?
I went back to retail. I went back to retail, exactly. So as I was considering leaving, and listen, I was born in the Midwest and worked for a fireman and policeman. So I had to be prepared, right? And I wasn't going to leave without knowing where I was going, even though I didn't announce it when I left. So as I was interviewing and kind of going through the what color is my parachute, I was because I had been president of Disney Store, I was eligible for CEO of retail jobs. And
Right.
there was, at that time, there was a couple of really interesting ones open. And I interviewed for three or four different brands. And I kept coming back to Claire's because I did understand the Claire's customer. I understood from all my years at Disney, I understood that teen tween
Right.
consumer. And to your point, the ear piercing experience and the birthday experience and the, the Claire's thrived because of the mall, the mall rats. We loved the mall rats, right? Where they get dropped off by their parents with $20 and, they'd come in and buy three pairs of earrings and then go get a pretzel in the food court. We understood her and him. We had male customers as well. So
Yep.
I was really drawn to that one. And I also love that it was global. Claire's, we had stores in 41 countries, and I had been working so hard in global with Disney that I wanted global, and some of the other opportunities were US only. So it ticked all the right boxes for me. I mean, it meant moving, and it was also moving back to the Midwest because they were based in Chicago. So it was, I think I was feeling my Midwestern roots a little bit.
Yeah. So when you're thinking about, this, I mean the places that you've been and what we were talking about before the at the start of the podcast, what sort of has led you to that mission, having the mission of being a human-centered leadership?
I think it really was when I wrote the book and started going through. I've been a journaler since I was like 13, and including the entire, the entire time I was CEO and stuff, I have a couple bins full of journals. And I really went back and looked at a lot of those journals as I was preparing for the book and, talked to a lot of people that had worked for me, worked with me, like as I was kind of doing the research for the book. And I never really thought I had a leadership style. You know what I mean? Like Howard Schultz, who's somebody I admire from Starbucks, was always called himself a servant leader, right? And he kind of defined servant leadership. And I was like, well, I'm not really a servant. Like, I'm a servant leader. I believe in servant leadership. It's also very human focused. But I said, what I realized, and I think part of it was having moved through corporate as an out gay man, I was always about creating cultures and environments where people could bring their full authentic selves to work and could feel physically and psychologically safe to be themselves. And so I was managing diversity and DEI before it was an acronym, before it was woke and all the things it is. I always believed that our team had to be diverse, not only in its makeup, but diverse in thought and diverse in experience and diverse in age. And I was always very human focused. And I was known for people still to this day would be like, I can't remember how you remembered everybody's names, right? Like I was known for walking around the floor and talking with people and calling people by name and asking them about their children. That was just naturally me. So when I had a kind of did the research and like, what was my style? I kept coming back to authentic leadership, that there was a movement on authentic leadership. And I was like, oh, that's what I am. And then I've been morphing that lately with some stuff I'm working on into this human-centered leadership where it's leading with empathy, it's leading with kindness, it's leading with equity and justice, and it's just leading with creating, like I said, thriving environments. And it's really about building culture, right? Like my leadership style was about building culture. That's what it was about.
And I think that it's so true, and it's so important, and it's been a topic of conversation quite with a lot of guests. We're talking about, making sure that no matter what, whether you're the CEO or whatever your position is, if you are leading a team, to share the vision and mission of what the team is doing, but also really get to know the people in your on your team so that you can relate it back. Like, so if I know that, if you're on my team and you said to me, I have this dream of one day, whatever it is, I want to be able to say, okay, guess what, Jim? You know what? this position and what we're doing, I want to explain to you how I think it ties back to your vision for you
Yes.
or your personal
Yes.
mission.
This is why I love listening to you, Jacqueline, because I always said, like, the mission and vision can't just be some statement that's up on a wall or on a piece of paper. It's your job as the leader to chunk that mission and vision out and make every person understand on the team how they're contributing to the mission and vision. So, how is the accountant doing it? And how is the graphic designer doing it? And how is the intern doing it? Because you're all contributing to that mission and vision. And I'm not saying I want you to be like a cult, but I want you to believe that what you're doing is moving that mission and vision forward.
Right.
And
No, it's true. And in some ways it
completely.
is. It's like being the cult,
Yeah,
right?
like, and it's your job.
Right. But it's like to embody that like desire to know that each and every one of the people that are in that company, and I say everybody's a team player, that everybody on the team, from the person that might be the security guard to the
Yeah.
that is cleaning the bathrooms, we
Yeah.
all are on the same mission of whatever that
Yes.
greatness is that we
Yes.
collectively want to do. So,
100%.
you said something that I really want to tap into, and that is you said really having a great diverse group. And I personally will tell you that I hate labels. Like, I don't want to,
Yes,
like,
yes.
when no offense, when DEI became a label, I was like,
Yeah.
oh, you just
Yeah.
ruined it, you
Yeah,
know?
for sure. For sure.
Well,
And
sorry.
it became performative and something that we were counting, and that's never what it was supposed to be. But anyway, yes.
Right. So it's, and I'll go back to when, you know, what I, in the 80s, when I was applying to colleges and all those interesting fun things. And it's like, you know, you were like, oh, I hit the quota of the diversity for women at this school,
Yeah.
but, and, or if I'm getting a job, you just never want that to be a thing. So I'm just gonna, I'll say,
No.
right. You never
Yeah,
want it to
I never wanted to be a diversity hire. No,
right.
like it, no. No, but I think when the word diverse that I use, and I could interchange it with unique, is because of exactly what you're saying, because I think good ideas can come from anywhere. I think I'm not title driven. I'm not hierarchical driven, where it's like all the ideas happen at one level and then everybody else just executes. I don't believe in that. That I wanted diversity of thought and diversity of experience. And especially in retail and in media and entertainment, I was in consumer facing businesses. And I always wanted the teams that I was building and working with to also reflect our customer base, right? Like I really wanted them. Like, and when you talk about a brand like Disney is ubiquitous, right? I mean, most people like Disney, and most people go through a phase, especially if they have children, where Disney is a big part of their life. And that means all different countries and different regions within the United States. There you go. There you go. I mean, it's part of people's stories. I mean, I grew up on it. Oh my God, my mom and my grandmother are huge Disney fans. And so I was raised on Disney. So I always wanted a group that reflected our customer base, right? So if I walked into a room at Disney Store and I saw a bunch of young, bright college graduates who had all gone to Ivy League schools and or all West Coast, I was like, we're not really reflecting what we're building this product for, what we're building this experience for. And so that's really when I was working with HR and my chief people officer and building teams, it wasn't about quotas. It wasn't about counting. It was about anytime there was an open position, I just asked recruiting and HR, present a wide array of candidates. Do not present me five people that look exactly the same, that have the same resume. I want the hiring managers to have choice, and I want them to be challenged to think differently. And I think it was particularly important in global businesses because the worst thing when I was the global head of Claire, when I was CEO of Claire's and global head of Disney Store, I never wanted to be called too American because we did more business at Disney Store outside the US than we did inside the US. And even though corporate headquarters was in the US, I had very strong teams in London and Tokyo in South America. I wanted their voices to be represented at the table. I wanted their customers, their guests, as we called them at Disney, to be represented. And so I was very cautious of being too American and having like an American bias. And if anybody said to me that product is too American, it won't work in our market, I really had to look at it and say, okay, are they right? You know, is this a not invented here syndrome or is it just too American? It was so important for global teams, so important.
So this is what I was going to ask you about. It's diversity versus values.
It's again, I think it goes back to the authentic leadership and the human-centered leadership. I want everybody's uniqueness. Like I love cooking. Cooking is one of my passions, and I love creating stews and soups. I think again, it's Midwestern, right? And I think it's fun when you put unexpected ingredients together into the gumbo, and all of a sudden, the gumbo, like if you look at a gumbo recipe, like a New Orleans gumbo recipe, it honestly doesn't make sense on paper because you're like, wait, it's got shrimp and sausage and crawfish, and like it's got the weirdest assortment of things, and you think this is going to be a train wreck. And when you bring it all together and let it simmer and let it stew, all of a sudden you've got this bowl of amazingness with red beans and rice. And that's to me, like I was always trying to create that stew where it was like, I didn't want an echo chamber. I didn't want, you know, I mean, my God, Disney Store had 10,000 employees, but say we had 800 people in headquarters. I did not want 800 clones of myself. I didn't want people who are just going to be sycophants and just say back to me, yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. I wanted to be challenged. I wanted people who are like, well, you know what? I worked at NBC Universal and we did it this way and this really worked. I'm like, oh, okay, let's talk about that. You know, I mean, that's why I say diversity of experience. And I think diversity of age, right? Like generations. Like, yes, I loved the interns and the new college graduates, but I also loved my 30-year veterans who had been there, done that, seen it all, right? Like had weathered every storm. We talk about the roller coaster, had weathered every storm. I loved putting them on teams together and making them figure out how to work together to see what would come out of the stew. I mean, that's really what it was about.
Yeah, no, and
It's
I
not
absolutely love
easy.
that.
It's not easy.
I don't think it is easy. So let me ask you. So you started, you were at the Gap, right? And
Department
so
stores and then Gap, yeah.
what okay. So what do you think was the quintessential point that helped you rise up to where you
I
took over?
100% know. I 100% know the tipping point. And I think it's a really important lesson. And I, again, when I'm with students, I tell them this. So when I was hired by the Gap, I was hired as a district manager, which meant I ran stores. I was originally hired in Detroit and then I got moved to Chicago. So I had like at any time between 10 to 12 stores. I was in the field organization, like we were running stores. And I was very good at running stores. I was very neat, clean, well-merchandised, motivated teams. We hit our numbers. And I was on a field career path, which meant I was going to be a district manager and then a regional manager. And then I wanted to be the vice president of stores. That was the career path I was on. And I can tell you 100% the tipping point. I was running stores in Chicago. Mickey Drexler, who was the CEO of Gap, brought four of his executives from Gap headquarters in San Francisco to visit stores in Chicago. And we were on a cost-cutting time. So we did not rent cars with drivers. That meant we had to drive different people around between the stores. So you're very nervous because you're like, first off, you're driving and you don't want to get in an accident, but you're basically being interviewed the whole time you're in the car, right? I got the pleasure of driving Mickey between a couple of different stores and one of his other executive vice presidents. And about a week after that visit, my boss called me and said, "Hey, San Francisco thinks you're a merchant." And I said, "What? Like what? What's a merchant?" I didn't even know what a merchant was. And she said that, yeah, the people that do the product in the stores, they think you'd be a really interesting merchant. And they're starting this training program where they're going to train merchants. They want people from the field to train merchants. She said, "Now I'm going to be honest with you. It's going to be a lateral, almost backward move because you're going from being a district manager to being a merchant trainee. But I think you should go out to San Francisco and interview for this and see what you think. They want you to fly out, spend a week, go to some meetings and see what you think." And I was like, "All right." And so I went out, and by the third meeting of the first day, I was like, "Oh, I'm a merchant." I didn't even know I was a merchant. The way that I looked at the business was from the product standpoint, not only the people standpoint, but the product standpoint. And by the end of the week and all the interviews and meeting the people I'd met, I wanted to do it. And so I made a calculated move, but a risky move. I left a career path that I was thriving in and moved into becoming a trainee overnight, like literally a startie. Like, I mean, I was basically a neophyte. And those first 6 months, I had so much self-doubt and insecurity because I was like, "What did you do?" Because I would be in meetings and I wouldn't know what they were talking about. And I would think, "Oh my God, you've completely screwed up your career." Those first 6 months, I was taking work home every night. I was studying like I was in a master's class. And then all of a sudden, like 6 months, the light kicked in and I became a really, really successful merchant. And I did men's knits, I did sweaters, I did activewear. And when I became a president of a retailer and a CEO of a retailer, I was a unique person because I had both the field side and the product side, and not many people had that. So even though I never sat there when I made that decision to make that move and say, "Oh, this is going to help me be a CEO someday," it did help me become a CEO someday. I mean, that changed my career path for sure. And the learning and going around the world, I traveled around the world making Gap product, Southeast Asia, Africa, Italy.
So jealous.
It was unbelievable. I made denim in the old days when we still made denim in the United States. And
Oh my God, I love
I
it.
used Georgia denim that was then cut and sewn in Kentucky and washed in Texas. It was an incredible education, but it was an on-the-job training program, basically.
I love that. Listeners, as you hear that, this is a huge game changer because there's a couple of things. It's like giving people an opportunity. Sometimes, somebody, and I know that not everybody can get in front of
Yeah,
the CEOs.
totally.
But do you want to know what? Everybody can if you want to. I am sure if you want to, the CEO's like, oh, make the appointment happen. Be the nail that's, driving, and if you want that meeting, make it happen. But really the key is looking at the people that are in your tribe and helping them pull out the best in them.
Yeah, they saw a spark in me that I didn't know existed. And because people invested in me, I think that's why I'm so invested in mentoring and training and leadership development, because I want to help people find their true calling, their true passion. People invested in me. I've been very lucky. I write about it in the book. I had some incredible bosses and mentors along the way, and I had some bad ones, but I learned from all of them. And
Right.
I mean, I'm still in touch with all of them today. I mean, some of them aren't living anymore, but anybody that's living, I'm in touch with
Right.
those people. Yeah, I'm of a certain age now where unfortunately some of your bosses have passed on, but I mean, even my last quote corporate boss, Stacy Snyder at Fox, like, I learned so much from her, and I spent 3 years at Fox, and 18 months of that was when we were being acquired by Disney. Like, that was a high stress time when you're being bought by a competitor, basically. And
Right.
her leadership and style and grace under pressure and compassion for how she led us during that transition made me be a better leader for my people during that transition, for sure. Because I would be like, oh, Stacy's incredible at this. I got to up my game. Like, I've got to get better at this. And, anybody who's been through a merger and acquisition, when you're the little fish being eaten by the big fish, it's a
As I like
really,
to say,
really
pimped.
hard. Yes, it's a really hard role. It's really demoralizing, and you're basically just trying to hold onto a team, and you keep smiling and saying it's business as usual, and it's business as usual when you know that's like a crock. It's not business as usual, and
Right.
everybody's panicking about what their job is and do they have a future, and it's so hard. Like, that was probably my hardest management challenge ever, was managing those 18 months. But because I was being managed well, I think I did it okay.
It helps you do it. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
right. Because when you see it, you can, I mean, you can model it too, right? It's a great
Yeah. And
model.
I just had to be accessible at all times. That's the way she was.
Yeah. So, Jim, I could talk to you for hours.
Ah.
If there's one key lesson, I mean, we've shared quite a bit. We've talked about obviously, mission-centered leadership, but we also, and I think this is the part that I think is really important. We've touched on it, but haven't touched on it. A lot of the companies that you've been with, there's been a creative element to it. And we
For
talked
sure.
about before the show started, storytelling. And I think
Yes.
storytelling in business is really important. So can you share your insights on storytelling and the impact it can make?
Oh my gosh. I mean,
We
I
don't have
am a
we don't have 5 hours,
storyteller.
but
Yeah, no, I know I am a storyteller. So I'm like, okay, I
no.
gotta do the edited version. But to me, yeah, when I look back at my career, every company I worked at had authentic, it had an authentic story or authentic stories at its core. And I always felt that it was easier to market, it was easier to create product, it was easier to create training programs when you were coming from a place of an authentic story where you weren't having to make anything up, right? And I just think that storytelling is, tale as old as time. It's been around for the millenniums. And people learn, I think, more effectively through stories and through story sharing than they do in like a classroom, especially for adult learners, where it's like one-way communication. Like, I think what I love about storytelling is it's usually inherently two-way communication or group communication, and people are sharing stories. And it's like a different way of communication than going to like a one-way training for 4 hours where someone's just reading you a PowerPoint and you're trying to learn as you go. I think storytelling influences the product you're working on, the marketing programs you're working on, the communication, the training programs, all of it. I mean, I think it's at the core of everything. And I don't think I could work for a brand or a company that didn't have an authentic story at its core. Even like the authentic story of Gap, which was founded by the Fisher family in 1969, named after the Generation Gap, like that literally, founded in Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco, that was at the core of our DNA. What definitely was at the core of our DNA.
I think it's such a key important message because it also ties back to that vision and mission of a company, of where it is, and knowing that story about the why we want it to be and what we need to incorporate. So,
For sure, for
Jim,
sure.
I could talk to you for hours.
Thank
There's
you.
so much great wisdom that you have. How can our listeners connect with you, learn more, even more of you, maybe jump into some of your coaching, get some of your books?
Yes.
Where can
Yeah,
they
I
go?
mean, Well, my website is super easy. It's hijimfielding.com. Like, hijimfielding.com. I'm Jim Fielding on LinkedIn, and it is me. It's not a bot answering you. People DM me all the time. My book, All Pride, No Ego, is available anywhere books are sold, Amazon, any local bookstores. Instagram is Hi Jim Fielding. I'm really transparent. I post every day on LinkedIn. I'm telling stories all the time on LinkedIn. The website I'm constantly updating. And then, yeah, I mean, coaching services. I do public speaking all over the country. I've been around the world now doing public speaking. I love being in community. I love being with groups of people. I'm a people person. So, and I love
That's
meeting
awesome.
new people through LinkedIn. It's really easy.
Yeah, no, that's really fantastic. So, listeners, please do me a favor. Reach out to Jim. I will put links in the show notes so
Yes.
you can reach him, connect with him. But please go to LinkedIn, go to his website, go to follow him on Instagram. I will be. And if you have gotten great value out of this podcast episode, which I am sure you have because we've had some amazing game-changing insights, do favor of clicking the altogether amazing subscribe button. Do me one other favor and please share this episode with your friends, your colleagues,
Yes.
and other people who you think could be an amazing leader or can get value out of this. And remember, we're each and every one of us is the CEO of our own lives, so we lead ourselves. So, and that I am Jacqueline Strominger, the host of Unstoppable Leadership Spotlight podcast. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Jim, for being an amazing guest.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Jacqueline Strominger, and I want to thank you so much for listening to the Unstoppable Leadership Spotlight, Influential Leaders and Their Game-Changing Insights podcast. If you are a successful CEO, entrepreneur, or leader in your industry, and you have insights you would like to share, we want you to be a guest on this program. So please visit go.leaptoyoursuccess.com/podcast. And if you have gotten something out of this interview and you'd like to share the episode on social media, just go ahead and take a screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on socials. If you know somebody who would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show and include the hashtag Unstoppable Leadership Spotlight. I love seeing your posts and your guest suggestions. So we regularly are putting out new episodes and content. So please make sure you don't miss any episodes and go ahead and hit subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and they mean so much to me and my team. You want to know more about the podcast or about Leap to Your Success? Just go to the website, leaptoyoursuccess.com, or follow me, Jacqueline Strominger, on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Just plug in my name, Jacqueline, that's Jacqueline, dot Strominger, Strominger, and follow me on all the socials. So thank you so much for listening, and remember, be unstoppable.